For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number is not available today. And what I mean by that is because we have a pre-recorded guest, the majority of all this show, as a matter of fact, this segment is also pre-recorded. So we have Ward Connerly coming on. And again, this is pre-recorded. And I know this NFL issue is a very hot issue for this week and probably for many weeks to come as the NFL continues to poke you, the patriot, and you, the American, in the eye saying, America is the land of the unjust. So anyway, I'm not going to give you the toll-free number so you can call and, you know, vent a little bit about what's going on. However, if you miss this show or you can't listen to it in its entirety, it will be rebroadcasted on Saturday at 11 a.m. before the Whitworth game. Okay? And as you know, many of the parts of this show are co-related and entangled with each other, cross-referencing, so forth. So you really do need to download all these podcasts so you can listen to conversations that I had with, you know, Douglas Gibbs, Dr. Vile, and so forth. And when I say, if you listen to all these people that I've had that are constitutional scholars, not one of them has ever asserted that Republic Review is an unconstitutional process, then you need to go back and listen and not just take my word for it, because you'll actually hear none of them say this. So anyway, you need to download these podcasts at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org on the podcast page. For local announcements for you, if you want to join the fight for lower taxes, less government, and more freedom in Spokane Valley, and help reelect Councilman Caleb Collier, Mike Munch, and Ed Pace, Northwest Grassroots is sponsoring an event and is going to be emceed by Rob Chase. The keynote speaker is Representative Jacqueline Maycumber, and it is at La Belle Vie, and that is on the 28th of September at 6:30 p.m. And that is out on Apple Way in Spokane Valley. So make sure you find time, and I think you can actually find this as an event on Facebook. So by all means, please get out, support these good councilmen, and help them get reelected. Councilman Ed Pace also will be hosting his weekly town hall meeting events on Wednesday at 9 in the morning at McDonald's on University of Sprague, Friday morning at Forza Coffee on Sullivan and 4th, and Saturday morning at 8 at Rosars and University and Sprague. And again, these standing events that Ed Pace does is also on the ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website. So if you need the details, the addresses and so forth, that you will find there. This Friday morning at 7 a.m., G.R. Mobley will be speaking on Republic Review for the Republican Coffee Club out there at Hamilton and Trent. And again, that's 7 in the morning, and that's yours truly. So if you have questions, or if you just want to hear a little bit more, 7 in the morning is a good time to hear a little bit more. On October 6th, the Reverend Larry Staley will be speaking about the Shroud of Turin. Ought to be interesting. And so if you want details as far as the location and so forth, that is also on the republicreview.org website. After the break, as I started off, we're going to initiate the conversation I had with Ward Connerly regarding racism in America and why he got into this and so forth. So we don't really address, and I will ask Ward if he can call in or come back in to talk about, you know, kind of what's going on. And I will get into that myself. But so the next week and this week, or today, we're going to have Ward Connerly, because it was literally a two-hour conversation with him. And then the following the Ward Connerly conversation, we will start this conversation that I had with Bob Zadek, who is a lawyer down in San Francisco, has a radio show and so forth. Anyway, let me give you a little background. If you don't know who Ward Connerly is, he's the founder of the American Civil Rights Institute, which is a nonprofit national organization aimed at educating the public about the need to move beyond race, and specifically racial and gender preferences. Mr. Connerly has gained national attention as an outspoken advocate of equal opportunity for all Americans, regardless of race, sex, or ethnic background. And so, like I said, I'll probably have him back on just so we can talk about what's really going on in these NFL stadiums, Major League Baseball now, and even NBA, and why these guys are becoming progressive activists. And is this really freedom of speech? Because I believe this isn't freedom of speech. What they're doing is exercising the freedom of religion, because they're not happy with the religious ideology and the political ideology of individual liberty, individual sovereignty. If one understands what these guys are wanting, the outcome that they're seeking is creating a nationalized government that will actually dictate the end results, instead of having a blanketed law, a rule of law, and a justice system that's fair for all. Because if you look at the examples, I don't think you'll find anything out there where there are mistakes, and cops aren't perfect. I'm not perfect. But the system is not an unjust system. It's a fallacy and it's a false narrative. And all they're trying to do is try to promote nationalism, which, when you look at Ferguson, when you look at the Trayvon Martin case, and you look at some of these high profile cases that the president poked his nose into unconstitutionally, there was no reason whatsoever to inject and try to direct and dictate an outcome. The process actually worked, and through the jury of their peers, the outcome was a just outcome. And for the NFL and anybody to say that that was injustice, it's not like the cops went into a church during choir practice, isolated one guy, dragged him out into the street, beat him to a pulp, and then shot him in the back. That would be injustice, you know? Most important, anybody that is upset with what's going on in the NFL, call your congressman and tell them that they need to end the tax exemption for the NFL, and call your congressman and tell them to stop having the U.S. Armed Forces sponsor the NFL in any of these sports events. Before we go into break, I wanted to kind of give you a post briefing or some insights on, you know, my perspective of Constitution Day. And I don't know, you may want to go down to Home Depot and just buy a lot of burlap bags and waterproof bagging for, you know, digging in your backyard and filling up sandbags, because maybe it's just time to start putting sandbags around the house and so forth, if you truly love your liberty and your family. Because I was really disappointed at how few people, I mean, there's maybe 100, didn't get a final number, but I was just really disappointed how many people showed up and had an interest in hearing and celebrating the Constitution this past year. More importantly, there were some Republican officers, but I hardly saw anybody from the Republican Party coming out to celebrate the Constitution. The majority of the folks that were there were from the Constitution Party, or basically, you know, some good citizens. But I saw zero in leadership from the Republican, even the Libertarian Party. There was just really no leadership there. And so I'm hoping that we can change this, that next year we can start putting more pressure by starting now and saying, hey, how come you didn't show up? You know, okay, I had something going on, but you know, you should have known about this well in advance. How come you didn't clear your calendar to make this at least important enough to show up? I mean, who doesn't do something for the 4th of July? As a matter of fact, it's on everybody's schedule. It's on everybody's calendar, just like Constitution Day. Is our independence and setting off firecrackers more important than understanding the Constitution and trying to center our community, civics, and so forth? What we need to start doing is focusing again on our Constitution and understanding it, because we have way too many people that are illiterate on this. And let me just bury myself in my thoughts right now. We will be right back with Ward Connerly. So I just beg that you please stay tuned and listen to these important dialogues that I have with Ward. Thank you so much. Okay, folks, we are back, and I'm very, very excited to have Ward Connerly in the studio with us at this time. And I want to thank you for coming in, Mr. Connerly, or I call you Ward. And I want to let people know a little bit more about your background. You actually founded the American Civil Rights Institute, and when did you do that?
That was in 1997. And it was following the passage of Proposition 209 in California, which was a constitutional amendment, state amendment, that prohibited government agencies from treating any Californian differently in the arenas of university admissions, public education in general.
Okay.
Public contracting and public employment.
Right. So I believe that was affirmative action.
That was
the death
action.
Of affirmative action. That...
In California.
Okay,
right?
Great.
And then I went on to have similar constitutional amendments passed here in the state of Washington.
Okay, so let me go back. I guess what happened is you formed this organization and put the fear of God in California. They passed an amendment.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, see, folks, when you get started in doing something, it actually can lead to change. Keep going, please.
And following that, the states of Washington, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and my memory fades at that point, but there were six other states that we succeeded in getting to
pass amendments.
Follow California's lead.
Wow. So it is now illegal and unconstitutional for any educational institution to give preference to any race or any
individual,
any type of individual, regardless of their classification and so forth.
On the basis of race, gender, or sex.
Orientation.
Sexual orientation was not included because that is not,
a protected
in my
class.
View, a protected class.
Right, okay.
And we've ended affirmative action essentially in about 28% of this country's population where they reside. Affirmative action is forbidden.
So I'm going to guess that that's probably 13 to 14 states. And so it seems like there's still work to do for your institution.
It's not quite 13 states.
Okay.
Because California is larger than...
Oh, I see. So you're doing geographic
28%.
I see.
Right.
As far as the land mass.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And Florida. We had an interesting situation in Florida when we went there, because the governor at that time was Jeb Bush, and Bush did not want this on the ballot simultaneous with his brother running for president. So he did everything he could successfully to keep us off the ballot. But one of the things that he had to do was to pass an executive order that was the equivalent of what we were trying to put on the ballot.
Right.
And to make the argument that it's no longer necessary to put this on the ballot because I've done this by executive action.
Even though I'm sure in the Constitution in Florida, the executive, the governor, does not have legislative privileges. So did they get an amendment in Florida?
We did not get it. But the interesting thing is that his executive action has lived from 1998 until now.
Okay.
One of the things that I had argued was that for many reasons, his action was wrong.
Right.
But the fatal flaw that I saw was that a subsequent governor
could easily undo it.
Could easily undo it.
Right.
That has not happened.
Fortunately.
Fortunately.
And it would probably be to their political demise unless the sentiments change, right? It'd be if you were the governor and you had term limits, then sometimes terminal governors or terminal politicians will do things like when they're going out the door, they will give amnesty or they will pardon sentences of really bad people because they don't have to worry about living with the consequences of that action.
You got it. That was my fear, but I've been wrong several times in my life, and this was one of them.
And it's on the calendar, folks. So I have another question, and I'm dying to find out, because I've read your book, your first book, I believe, Creating Equal.
Creating Equal.
And I'm still unpacking, and I'm going to find that copy, and so hopefully in the future I can get you to autograph that for me.
My pleasure.
The important question is, what was it that caused you to become the leader that you are in creating the institution and in trying to invoke this change in undoing the, I call it acts of social engineering when governments and institutions for government, such as universities and so forth, create an uneven playing field such as affirmative action. Because it's just it is reverse discrimination. It's the elephant in the room. So what was it? What was that catalyst that made you take a role in leadership?
Well, I've always believed that we are individual citizens of this great country and that the government trying to herd us into various tribes is just stupid. And that is something that comes out of every pore of my body.
Well, they're very good at doing that, aren't they?
They're very good at that.
And they understand, and I want to add this to this and let you go on, but the old adage, united we stand, divided we fall, and they know as long as they can keep us divided and keep us fighting over these stupid little things, these tertiary things, we can't get things done. And so keep going.
In 1995, a dear friend who was then governor, Pete Wilson, convinced me to accept a 12-year sentence, as I call it, on the Board of Regents of the University of California, the whole system. And it was there that I learned how pervasive the whole system of race preferences, some call it affirmative action, really is. And I was, during a 12-year period, you get to serve many roles, and I was chair of the audit committee and the finance committee and all of those major committees. And not only was the university engaging in wholesale discrimination,
right,
in the guise of pursuing diversity, but the university was getting weaker. Students were not as accomplished because of the consideration of race. And so I decided to do something about it. And I convinced my colleagues to pass a resolution that I had drafted that forbid the university from engaging in any use of race in any of its transactions, and that passed narrowly.
But how long were you in the Board of Regents before you got to that point? And I know we're going to be coming up on break, but go ahead and answer that.
Well, I'd been on the board for about a year.
Okay.
And it was well known that I was close to the governor, and that if I was pushing this, he would probably be supporting me.
Okay.
And so this was early in my term.
Oh, okay.
That so, this happened.
So you were winning winning friends and influencing people, I believe. as I see this, and we're going to be going into break probably in less than a minute, but as I see this, you definitely had a headwind probably in trying to invoke change. One of the things I wanted to ask you, when we come back from the break, I'd like to get your perspective on all of the federal funding that comes in and how they tie this to the education system and how they, you know, hold you hostage to their agenda. But anyway, folks, we're going to go on a quick break here as you hear it. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Thank you very much. And we will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Okay, so we're back and we still have Ward Connerly with us. And I was just asking about the funding, but I know you didn't get a chance to finish your dialogue on the headwinds comment that I made. Since this was really early in your term of the 12 years sentence, as you call it, what was it like going through and fighting the academics and the bureaucrats and so forth in moving these types of changes forward?
It was hell. Not only the libs who were opposed and the race advocates who were opposed, but many of my colleagues on the board were opposed because many of them just didn't want the circus that they knew would ensue at every meeting with these different groups coming to the board. And
because they were public.
They were public meetings,
right.
And these folks would protest and call us racist and Uncle Toms and sellouts and
right.
All of that. And they just didn't want that. But that's where I enlisted the support of the governor. And he came to a meeting and said, do the right thing. If you think that Ward is right, then follow his lead.
Right.
And that had a very compelling ring to it, and they did in fact follow my lead, and the board passed the resolution, and that's when all hell kind of broke loose.
Okay, so I'm going to actually put you on a different tangent. We're going to go down a different rat hole because this brings to my mind. What ends up usually happening, folks, is when people recognize the change is coming and they don't want that change, they don't want those purse strings to be drawn, and they don't want to be closed out of this gravy train, they usually make a huge ruckus. Now, Milton Friedman basically said that when people realize that the purse strings are finally closed, that they can't have access to that cash or that flow, they will end up eventually moving on. And I think I kind of mentioned this to you in one of my comments in an email. Is that what happened, or did they continually try to reopen that door?
The latter. The swamp is a place that has many zip codes. And one of them was the University of California. The president, the chancellors, UC has about 9 undergraduate campuses, and Berkeley, UCLA, and so on. And all of those individuals were hell-bent on making sure that I did not succeed. This rookie, essentially, would not upend the University of California. And so they did everything in their power to prevent me from succeeding.
So when you got the amendment passed and basically closed the door, how long did they continue fighting and trying to undo all of this? Or did they finally recognize we lost this war, we lost this battle?
To this day.
They're still fighting.
They're still fighting. It's different approaches. but they are still fighting. The university is a multi-billion dollar institution, and one does not just go in there and expect that you say, thou shalt not use race, and think that overnight you're going to change the culture
right.
of that institution.
Right, right, right.
And so they will look for proxies for race, and they will do everything they can to try to negate what the regents voted for. And now the people, a year and a half after I did that, I put it on the ballot of California, and the people, by a 55% to 45% margin, validated our action and put it into the state's constitution.
Now, in hindsight, after the validation, and you say that this continues going on, I also made another comment to you in my email that it took Moses 40 years to change a culture. And I don't believe that we have time to change the culture first. I think we have to force these changes, and then we have to kind of bring people up to speed. Do you agree?
I totally agree. The changing of the culture, though, in our country will require that we do a lot of different things, the most important of which is that we institute and reaffirm the American identity. Everybody needs to buy into the notion that we're Americans. We're not African American or Asian American or
the hyphenated American.
The hyphenated Americans.
Right.
We're not that.
Right.
Because therein lies the divisions
sure.
within our country, and it allows people to use this thing that we call race to do some very terrible things and a lot of mischief.
Oh, absolutely.
Is done in the name of race, as we saw in Charlottesville, where the hysteria just became overwhelming.
Right.
So this will require that the culture about race be changed.
Yes.
And that race be taken out of our discourse. The census has to be changed, the way we gather information about people. Race needs to be purged from every document that we have. John F. Kennedy once said that race has no place in American life or law.
Right.
I think that he probably was thinking of it a little bit differently than I am.
Right.
But race, we need to squeeze race out of every pore
right.
of the American body.
Uh-huh. I heard it once said that if somebody could create a pill that everybody could ingest, and it would literally morph everybody into transparent beans, where, you know, your skin, hair, and everything else would just, you know, the pigmentation would just go away. We would just be vessels, and we'd actually be able to see our bone structures and everything else. This friend of mine said, and it goes to the Star Trek version of the black and white person. Remember, if you remember that episode where they hated each other, but they looked identical. These guys were twins, except the difference was that the other guy was black on one side and he was black on the other. And he goes, they will always find something because your arteries are on this side. They'll find something to find a racial bias or some biases to hate you. And
something that makes you different.
Yes, right. That they it's a seen perception. And so it's I would hope to think that if we became transparent that we could get beyond this. But again, there is something to that, to where when we see something that is uniquely different, then we kind of go to this, oh, well, you know, these people that have arteries on the outer sides of their shoulders or whatever this change or difference might be, it's one of those things that people just find ways to hate and become biased over those types of things. So I guess my question then would be is that if it's going to take 40 years to change the culture and we invoke this change and you want to move us towards a higher enlightenment, because I think the American experiment that you talked about was enlightenment. These men were enlightening themselves more and more of a true liberal concept that all men were created equal, where for thousands of years there were these, you know, antiquated antiquated beliefs and archaic ideas that people were literally different, and that, you know, they were bound by these racial makeups. I remember reading in Jefferson's dialogue in his journal where he really felt that, you know, blacks were different, and he didn't think that they were capable of doing math and so forth until he actually met, and it was up in Philadelphia where he met a poet, and it was another black that was capable of doing extensive detailed mathematics and so forth, and he was absolutely blown away, and it literally changed his paradigm. That was kind of this epiphany to him that he was wrong, and that's one of the reasons why he actually pinned the idea of trying to repatriate free blacks that didn't want to have to live with this institutional racism that was being created because of these tragic mistakes. He pinned the idea of repatriating them back to Africa, and that ended up becoming Liberia, and as we know, the story of Monrovia and how that got started. So I'm sorry, I went on and I was asking you a question. I guess the real question is, and we probably don't have time for it because we're going to be coming up on a break here, is what is it and what type of things do we need to do? Because we have to be sensitive of not doing, you know, more harm and trying to fuel and or pit one group over another. So once Ward Connerly has his utopia come true, where we literally become a even playing field for all people in America, then what is it that we need to do to take us to that? And so we're going to go to a break right now, folks. And when we come back, I'll let Ward Connerly answer that question. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Okay, so we are back, and let me do a precursor apology for the little bit of noise. We've got some construction going on around the studio, and I want to get as much time as I possibly can with Mr. Connerly. And so we're going into the break. What is it we need to do, sir, to make it successful in trying to create this true even playing field?
We cannot create an even playing field. I think that is
utopia.
Yeah, and I think it's a fallacy for us to think that we can. The thing that we can do is to make sure that the playing field that the good Lord gives us is not littered with a lot of referees on the field who call themselves government that create more obstacles than need be.
Right.
The objective, I think, should be to get those referees off the darn field.
Right.
And to enable us to play the game without the interference of the darn referees.
Right.
And so my objective is not to create the level playing field, as many of my opponents argue that eliminating affirmative action eliminates the level playing field. Affirmative action, if that's what their objective is, to give us a level playing field, is misguided, because you can't do that. It's even if we accepted the premise, it's a fool's mission.
Oh, sure.
So what I want to achieve is not an equal opportunity society, but a society in which we have more freedom to pursue our own objectives, our own goals,
right,
without the government being involved.
Right. So there are there are organizations out there that tend to, and businesses that tend to have either groupthink, and there's nothing wrong with it. As a matter of fact, diversity doesn't necessarily guarantee success. If one looks at Germany in their engineering feats and so forth, or even Japan and how they competed with America, they didn't have a diverse culture and society. They were, you know, very monolithic, and they're homogeneous as far as their society goes, but they were able to innovate and do all sorts of things that people claim requires diversity. And so they've actually proven that diversity isn't the pathway to success. And so here in America, we do have organizations, and a good, and one I used academically was FUBU. It's a clearly an organization that really hires blacks, and it is a organization that does that. And I don't want to see laws come along to say you can't even do that. But I think that maybe what you're talking about, and I'll try to articulate this, is that we need to create an awareness and a consciousness so that people can say, you know what, I don't even want to be perceived in creating a business that is that way. However, I happen to live in an area of demographics that is this particular way, that the people I want to work here, you know, I want them to be able to walk, ride their bus or what have you. And I don't want government to then all of a sudden say, we're going to ship people in because you don't have a diverse enough business. And so we shouldn't be doing that. But I guess, is that not correct? What we want to do is we want to have an awareness and a consciousness that we are at least saying, you know, hey, engineering in the community of disciplines is for some reason being attracted to white males, and they have a real hard time getting women to become engineers and other people to become engineers. So it's their job to try to say, you know, what is it that makes this happen? And, you know, and not try to manipulate it by incentivizing and those types of things at the expense of the others. And so, right?
One of the things that has gone terribly wrong in our society is this, all this mindless blather about diversity.
Yeah. Okay.
Diversity in a society that is a pluralistic one such as ours, it will just happen. It just is. And it will happen on the natural, but there's no way that I think we can or should try to say diversity amounts to five of these and three of those and two of those.
Right.
The quest for diversity, the so-called diversity, that's the perversion that we have gotten involved in. And so by getting rid of the use of race, my vision, if you will, is to have a stop preoccupying ourselves with is it diverse or whatever, because in the academic world where I served as an appointed regent for 12 years, it's a false concept, because you go to Berkeley campus, and you will find 40 varieties of Asian individuals, very, very diverse, from all over the planet.
Right.
What they really mean when they say Berkeley doesn't have enough diversity,
right,
not enough black people. That's what they really are saying.
And then even in the black race, culture, whatever you want to call it, there still is a just like you said, there's different Asians. There are equally different blacks as well. And as a matter of fact, it blew me away in the 80s when I realized that there was color consciousness amongst blacks.
Sure there is.
That he's not dark enough, or he's too dark. Or same thing with she. I mean, it's always, and I go, you got to be kidding me. And it goes back to that black and white, that transparency. We're always going to find something to divide ourselves or to create our own little cliques.
Absolutely. I was born in Leesville, Louisiana, and my family was a mixture of Creole and white, Irish and French. White and just everything you can think of. And we were considered the high yellers. And so there was a lot of diversity within the neighborhood that I grew up in, and certainly within my own family.
Right.
But we were not accepted in the, quote, black community in many respects because we were not the true blacks.
There you go.
So that's, you know, the whole idea of diversity is a myth.
Okay. Well, I know this is being our third segment. This is going to be the end of this particular episode because my shows aren't 2 hours or three. And so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to span this over to another show. But I think it's really important. And one of the intents in asking you to come in is to try to help create some level of reasoning and I think give people some insights in how we can move forward because of the civil unrest, because people will not let, you know, wounds heal. They will not let dead dogs die. And this society does not have the ability to say those two magical words, "I'm sorry," you know, to allow the hurt and the healing to occur, you know, allow those things to actually become healed. And it just amazes me that we can't move forward in working together. We allow ourselves to constantly be divided. So we only have a couple minutes left. 1 minute left, as my engineer tells me. And so if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to actually do a couple more segments and we'll bleed this over to another show. And actually, I'm planning on hopefully soon having two shows. So this may actually be tomorrow's show if this is being aired on a Tuesday, because I don't know yet because we're pre-recording.
Whatever you need.
Okay, I really appreciate it. Folks, I know that people are seeing in the news and watching this nation get split apart. We've been in this mode for decades. As a matter of fact, it goes all the way back even to the Civil War of Reconstruction, and it goes all the way back, as I was mentioning to Mr. Connerly Award in the very beginning, regarding the struggle that they had during the Constitutional Convention, that the framers, all of the states were willing to give up slavery except for three. Those three states were the Carolinas and Georgia. They said that we will be crushed if we have to do this. Economically, we do not have the labor force to do this, nor did they have the money. So they somehow, you know, in their appeal, convinced the political compromise that I believe became a tumor that we've never surgically removed, and we've never been able to truly heal from the damage that those men made in that political compromise. And so we're out of time, and we'll be back either tomorrow or next week. I don't know, but we will be back with Ward Connerly in our next show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please be a part of Reclaiming the Republic. God bless.